The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you. Researchers at Simon Fraser University and at BC Cancer have pinpointed specific physiological traits they say can help people live longer, healthier lives. According to a recent study published in Geroscience, the healthiest older adults live in a sweet spot where more than 100 different physiological traits interact. And in that dynamic interaction, there is this magic that makes them healthier than their counterparts. Key to living in the sweet spot is homeostasis, which is a collection of mechanisms that your body uses to maintain consistency in blood sugar levels, blood pressure, and body temperature, to name a few. The more consistent your body is, the healthier you are. Deviations from optimal ranges of vitamin D, calcium, glucose, and other mechanisms lead to a higher risk of mortality. I invited Angela Brooks Wilson, a co-author of the report, to join me for a conversation that matters about what we now know about the sweet spot of health and how this knowledge may equip you to live longer and healthier. Angela, welcome.
Thank you, Stu.
Was this kind of a revelation when you started to collect all this data and went, when all these points start to line up, we can now have a clear empirical, report on what is at work in healthier older adults?
It actually happened a little more slowly than that.
Oh.
And we, it started with an observation we made in the super seniors study. And we were looking at the telomeres, which are the ends of the chromosomes.
Yep.
And we had a hypothesis that we thought was exciting. And the hypothesis was that the super seniors, who are exceptionally healthy elderly people, would have telomeres that were long for their age.
Yes.
So not just long, but telomeres change over the lifetime. They reduce in length, and we thought they'd be long for their age. And we did the experiment and tested it, and we found that our hypothesis was overthrown. It was not correct.
Oh, really?
Nope.
Oh.
They did not have long telomeres for their age, and we were really surprised. But what they actually had was, as a group, the super seniors had lower variance for their telomere length.
What do you mean by lower variance?
So lower variance means the difference between the individuals in the group was lower than for a group of midlife individuals. Oh. And that's a surprise too. So we interpreted that to mean that the supers were maybe closer to an optimal value for telomere length. So that is what, so we made a new hypothesis, as you do as a scientist.
Right.
And the hypothesis was that there's an optimal value. And then we expanded that hypothesis to say maybe there's an optimal value for a lot of things. And some of this is kind of obvious, Stu. So if you think of something like blood pressure, of course there's an optimal value. We all know blood pressure can be too high and it can be too low.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an optimum, and you could call that a sweet spot. But we went looking at, as you said, a lot of different traits, phenotypes, measures, looking for the ones that showed sweet spots. And we found lots of them.
So in essence, you're saying just because you're able to maintain your blood pressure,
mm-hmm.
that's not enough. That's an individual trait. What seems to be most important is that you have a wide array of these 100 or more traits.
Mm-hmm.
And then how do they interact with one another? Or is it like, what do we know about what the next step of understanding of this is?
So you can think of all these different traits. If you think of all the things your body has to do, and you kind of have to divide them up into traits in a way. You could say the cells in your blood, all the different types of cells. If you measure them, they have sweet spots too. Some mm-hmm. of them do, They do interact. Some of them interact. Others might be a bit more independent. But when you put it all together, it's a picture of what's going on in your body and your physiology, and how close you are to that those ideal levels reflects how healthy you are, and how healthy you are as you age.
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Development, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you. So I noted in the group that you studied, you were looking for super seniors or maybe even super centenarians who hadn't had cancer, who hadn't had diabetes, and a variety of other things. Why was it important to you that you found this optimal group that somehow seemed to have navigated their way through life and got to this point without other major ailments along the way?
So that goes back to our original study that started quite a few years ago. And when I and others set out to think about, it was about the genetic basis mm-hmm. of long-term good health. And when we formed our team and we were thinking about how do we study the genetic basis of long-term good health, you can choose the trait. You can define it yourself. And some people define longevity as being what they're interested in. And they may say they're interested in people who are over 100 years old or people over 110 years old. There are studies of people over 110 or 105. What we decided to do at the time is we said, well, what is important for people's quality of life and their health, and what is important for our Canadian medical system as well? So it was a bit of a bit of a hybrid. So we said it's important to and what would be easy to classify to be able to say they meet the criteria or they don't meet the criteria. And after some reflection, we decided that the phenotype would be 85 or older. So 85 is referred to by gerontologists as the oldest old. So we went with that definition.
Oldest old.
Oldest old is the term they use. And oldest old who have never been diagnosed with the five big diseases of aging. And they also happen to be the diseases that cost our medical system a lot. And
so what are those five?
Those are cancer, cardiovascular disease, major pulmonary disease, diabetes, and dementia. And we all want to go as long as we can without developing these diseases.
So you needed them as basically your base model to say, this is the goal.
Yeah.
So what is it that is it is about them?
Exactly.
So you said that initially when you started off, you were looking at it from a perspective of genetics. Mm-hmm. As you've worked your way through the study, how important is genetics in arriving at that state?
So it's, you know, that's a great question, and genetics does play part of the picture, and the picture depends what phase of life you're talking about. So genetics can have an effect at any time of life. So there are, you know, individuals who may inherit variants of genes that increase their risk of cancer. And sometimes that has an early onset or a later onset. That's not terribly common. Not uncommon, but not super common. What's more common is chronic diseases that we as a population develop that are part or largely due to lifestyle. So we all know that smoking is very bad for lung cancer, cardiovascular disease, COPD, all sorts of issues. Exercising is a good thing, and it's really important for healthy aging. Maintaining a healthy body weight is important. And so those things are all very, very important over the lifespan for all of us. And genetics is actually a smaller part, but there are genetic variants that promote healthy aging and longevity, and they've been found in a few studies around the world, but they're not, I wouldn't say that they're what most of us in the general population need to obsess about. We should be obsessing about exercising enough, not what our genes are.
So exercise, food, all that, and that plays into the role of epigenetics then?
In part, yes.
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Developments, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you. When you take a look at this group that are in this perfect sweet spot, are there commonalities amongst them at earlier stages in life as well, even though they will have come from diverse you know, regions and experiences in life?
So there are some, and I should divide the sort of the findings in two. So our most recent findings we actually generated in a fantastic study called the Canadian Longitudinal Study on Aging, and that was established and run through McMaster University. And it studies 50,000 Canadians from across the country. And in this study, it's wonderful. As a researcher, you can apply and you can say, here's my analysis idea, apply for the data. And they have a rigorous system and you can get the data. And so this is what we analyzed in our most recent Geroscience publication.
Yep.
But that was inspired by our observations in the super seniors.
Yes.
And so we took our hypothesis from the super seniors about sweet spots and then applied it to the bigger data set in Canadian Longitudinal Study on Aging. But your question about across the lifespan is interesting, because in the Canadian Longitudinal Study on Aging, that is one of the goals of that study. They're following these 50,000 people and recharacterizing them every few years so they can see how their health goes over their life. With the super seniors, we invited them to participate at one point in time when they were already 85 or older.
Right.
And at one point, we did ask them, we tried to give them a questionnaire that said, how much did you exercise when you were a child or 20 or 30 or so on? And what we actually found was we didn't think that they could recall and we could quantitate well enough from their memory what they did over their lifetime. And in the end, we didn't try to really study that intensively. But you asked about what do they have in common, and actually what the super seniors have in common with each other is they are very active. So they're busy. I always like to mention the 100-year-old lady who we had to wait 2 months to interview her for the study because she was too busy organizing her own 100th birthday party. So they're busy, they're exercising, they're doing things, they're just very active.
Okay, you've just derailed my line of questioning because I was going to go to the psychological components of this, but we'll come back to that. When somebody says, okay, I'm going to retire, I have a tendency to go, don't do that. Because I think that stopping being engaged in the process of really personal growth in life is like, because there is no stasis there. Either you're moving forward or you're falling back. Am I right about that?
There's a whole body of literature about being engaged and social connectedness in aging, and social connectedness is really important. I wouldn't call myself an expert in that aspect of it, but it is well established that staying engaged is important. Now, I don't think that you have to stay engaged in a traditional job necessarily to be engaged. But that said, we did have super seniors who were still working at the time that we interviewed them, age 85 or older. But they were all busy in one way or another, whether it was social events, clubs, or a job, or anything. They were, for the most part, they were very engaged.
When I was young, and this has been a motivator for me, I was given a small little essay by Pablo Casals, the great Spanish cellist, called A Salute to Life. And he starts off by saying, on my next birthday, I'll be 92 years of age. That's not young, of course, but age to me is a relative matter. He said, every day I wake up in the morning, I go to the piano and I play two passages and fugues of Bach. Mm-hmm. And every day I discover something new, exciting, mm-hmm. and rewarding in the music. Mm-hmm. The music is never the same. And he says, so for me, the concept of retirement means to begin to die. Mm-hmm. To die. I want to be able to go out and explore the world. And in essence, you're confirming what has been a motivating element in my life, that I mm-hmm. want to stay on that path of continual mm-hmm. learning and personal growth. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like this is important. And so this kind of leads to my next question. Well, you know, you said one of the big fives is dementia.
Yeah.
A number of years ago, I interviewed Max Sinatter when he was the director of mm-hmm. the Brain Research Center at UBC. And I said, you know, how important is frame of mind? And he rocks back in his chair and he goes, come on, man, be happy. and he was being facetious a little bit. But it's so important that you keep your brain actively engaged. Mm-hmm. So how much of that, I know that you were looking at physiological traits, mm-hmm. but how much of the psychological also plays a role in your long-term physical well-being? Are we able to make that definitive mm. connection yet?
Mm-hmm. So our own research in our own data doesn't really address that. And the reason is that the way we recruit, for example, the super seniors, we invite people who are 85 or older and who meet these criteria mm-hmm. to be in the study. Yeah. And then we say, what are they like? We don't know. It's harder to know the characteristics of the people who didn't make it into the study. And there's always a bias in how mm-hmm. you ascertain people. But it is, my understanding is it's known from other types of research that that is a factor, that staying engaged and keeping, you know, staying active helps to maintain things. Social networks as well are important. And if you're engaged in things, you will reinforce your social network, which is definitely important for healthy aging.
The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of Audlin Brown, BD Development, Stem Cell Technologies, and listeners like you. I know you're a scientist, mm-hmm. and the real scientists couch their predictions mm-hmm. because a prediction isn't science. It's a projection.
It's a hypothesis.
Yeah, yeah, which frequently is proven wrong.
Right.
Still, along mm-hmm. the way, mm-hmm. what were insights that you gleaned mm-hmm. that you would say, even though I can't scientifically say this is it, mm-hmm. what do you think that we're learning from this that other people can benefit from as far as having knowledge about the study and recognizing that there are people who get to the sweet spot? Mm-hmm. How can we help them, a lot of the people who are younger in life, make decisions that will increase the likelihood of them being in that place?
Okay. So if I understand you properly, Stu, you're saying what are my suspicions based on what we currently know?
Yes, I'm asking you to step outside of your scientific
yeah.
role
okay.
here. Yeah.
Okay. And actually, I do this with myself. You know, you mm-hmm. have your data, and what you know, what you can say is valid statistically and scientifically, and then you have your suspicion. And mm-hmm. and I, you know, I'm always thinking, oh, I should exercise more and things based on what I learned from this. One thing that was very striking that's described in our geroscience paper is that the strongest effect we saw was called hemoglobin A1C. So, and it's a measure of persistence of glucose in the blood over time, and it's used as a measure of how it's commonly used as a measure of how well a person with diabetes is controlling their blood
right.
sugar through diet and exercise
right.
and so on. And it's happened to be one of the phenotypes or traits that was available in the Canadian longitudinal study of aging data. And so it was included. And the most striking thing we saw was that it was actually very hard to find a sweet spot for HbA1c, because when we initially looked at the curve, it looked like the higher HbA1c goes, the worse your health. So that is true from the data. And then when we looked closer and closer and did the analyses slightly differently, we found that what we think is that the optimal value is actually very low in the CLSA data. And my provisional take-home message from that is that it is better to have less sugar. And so we come back to this thing that we all know, sugar isn't really good for us. We do know that. We shouldn't be eating a lot of sugar. But I was really struck by how that seemed to be manifesting in the data. And so I have eaten fewer desserts since we analyzed the data.
So you know Dr. Mark O'Mara.
Mm-hmm, I do, yeah.
He told me, he said, sugar's bad, but bread is worse. He said, bread turns to sugar in your body faster than sugar turns to sugar in your body. He said, there's something in the saliva that the moment you start to eat bread, the quicker it converts into glucose that is absorbed in the bloodstream than sugar. And so really it is, an awful lot of it can be controlled by being able to somehow to sugar.
Choose carefully what you eat.
Right. Yeah. Better to have an apple than apple juice. Better
Absolutely.
To have grapes than grape juice.
Absolutely.
Look for things that are going to be much lower on the glycemic index.
Absolutely. Yeah. Glycemic index is a great way to think about it. Yeah.
Isn't that something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that more than just saying have a balanced diet, that more than saying an exercise, but really control those A1Cs.
Mm-hmm. Really, really don't eat the sugar. I try to do as little as possible. Yeah, I'm not strong all the time, but as most of us, we occasionally lapse, but I know to limit it, yeah.
Yeah. So where do you go from here?
Oh, so where we go now actually is the most exciting part. So in the, the Canadian Longitudinal Study of Aging data, the data that it was available for analysis was generated because people already suspect that it's important. So we know HbA1c is relevant. We know blood sugar is relevant, cell counts in the blood and so on. And this is why they were measured in CLSA. And so it's kind of circular. When we look at that, we know it's important. We do find that many of those have sweet spots. Now, what we're actually going to do is we're going to use data that we don't understand as well. So we're going to take metabolites in the blood in the CLSA data, and we'll be looking for sweet spots for hundreds and hundreds of different molecules that can be measured in the blood. And we don't understand what they're for, how they're produced, or what they do. And what we'll be doing is we're turning the whole thing upside down, Stu. So what we're saying is where the telomeres of the super seniors showed lower variance, so as a group they're clustered together, than our control group, we're looking for metabolites where the variance of the healthiest people in CLSA is lower for that molecule than the less healthy people in CLSA. And we'll be saying that because we see this, we're using the variance as a statistical framework to identify traits that may be important for healthy aging that we don't understand the biology of.
Yet. Yeah.
And then, based on the ones that look like they have lower variance, we'll say, well, maybe those are important for healthy aging, and we'll look into the biology intensively. So that's actually the most exciting part, is using it to get to brand new things that we might not have even guessed about.
So stay tuned.
Yes, exactly.
Thank you for your time today.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening, and please visit conversationsthatmatter.ca and become a subscriber. And thank you to Audlin Brown, BD Developments, and Stem Cell Technologies for their support.